Greetings. In the name of Jesus, welcome here. Some special visitors here. Glad for each one that's here this morning. We're going to look at a parable of Jesus for our thoughts this morning. You may turn with me to Matthew chapter 22. Jesus told a parable. And let's think a little bit about the setting. If you turn back to chapter 21, you'll find that the record of Jesus riding that donkey into Jerusalem, we call it the triumphal entry, and the crowds and the children, and everyone was throwing down those palm branches and praising Jesus. And he came into the temple there, and his first order of business was to cast out the buyers and the sellers, because they had made his house a den of thieves, he said. And that started the whole dialogue with the Pharisees and the chief rulers there, and they didn't know what to do with Jesus, and they started talking to him, and he asked them some questions there in chapter 21 that they didn't know how to answer, because if they answered it this way, they would implicate themselves. If they answered another way, they were just reading their own judgments, and they didn't know how to answer him. And he went on and he gave a parable. We'll look a little bit later at some of what he told them toward the end of the chapter. But here he still is. He's in the temple. He's in a dialogue with the Pharisees and the chief rulers. And let's read chapter 22. And let's read the parable he told them in the middle of this. Chapter 22, verse 1, and Jesus answered and spake unto them again by parables, and said, The kingdom of heaven is like unto a certain king, which made a marriage for his son, and sent forth his servants to call them that were bidden to the wedding, and they would not come. Again he sent forth other servants, saying, Tell them which are bidden, Behold, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready, come unto the marriage. But they made light of it and went their ways, one to his farm, another to his merchandise. And the remnant took his servants and entreated them spitefully and slew them. But when the king heard thereof, he was wroth, and he sent forth his armies and destroyed those murderers and burned up their city. Then saith he to his servants, The wedding is ready, but they which were bidden were not worthy. Go ye therefore into the highways, and as many as ye shall find, bid to the marriage. So these servants went out into the highways, and gathered together all, as many as they found, both bad and good, and the wedding was furnished with guests. And when the king came in to see the guests, he saw there a man which had not on a wedding garment. And he said unto him, Friend, how camest thou in hither, not having a wedding garment? And he was speechless. Then said the king to the servants, Bind him hand and foot, and take him away, and cast him into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen. We'll stop reading there. As we know, Jesus often taught and communicated lessons to his audience, sometimes to his disciples, by parables, sometimes to the whole crowds, sometimes even to his enemies, as was the case here. These people, the last two verses of chapter 21 tells us what was going on in their minds. They'd like to get rid of him, but they were scared to because of the people. And here Jesus uses a parable. And some of his parables were difficult to understand. And the audience didn't know what he meant. And we have some times where Jesus would later explain further to his disciples so that they could understand what that parable meant. But not this parable. His audience that day, those Pharisees, they got it. They knew exactly what he was talking about and who he was talking about and what he meant. They knew. We don't have any record of him explaining this further. He didn't need to. They went on, the next verse says that, where we stop reading there, first verse 15 says, they got more serious about how to do away with this man, how to get rid of him. For us, it's a bit more difficult to understand this parable because we are not familiar, nearly as familiar with the culture and the way they did weddings in those days. But this parable was to those Pharisees, and I think for us, there's lessons for them and there's lessons for us. And for us to fully understand what Jesus would have us to take from these verses, we should spend a bit of time thinking about what it meant to his audience that day. And so I just titled the first point of this message, The Parable to the Pharisees. Now I see a number of youth here that I know were at Bible school, and I wonder how many of you took the Matthew class? How many Matthew students do we have here? A few. All right. Did you study this parable? Do you remember? I don't know what you studied exactly, but I'm fairly certain that if you studied the book of Matthew, you studied about the kingdom of heaven, didn't you? Central theme in the book of Matthew. The kingdom of heaven is like the kingdom of heaven. Many parables Jesus told that Matthew wrote for us talks about the kingdom of heaven. What is the kingdom of heaven? Is it the time when Jesus will gather all his followers and will go to be with him in eternity? Is that what Jesus meant when he talked about this? The kingdom of heaven in verse 2 is like unto. Mostly no, but a little bit of yes. The kingdom of heaven, as Jesus referred to it, is Christ's kingdom on earth, present day. And this wedding, we'll look at that a little bit later, this wedding is that invitation to join Jesus' kingdom. There's only two kingdoms, right? There's only the kingdom of his dear son and then the kingdom of darkness. And this is the kingdom of heaven. It includes all who pledge allegiance to Jesus as their king. And certainly the kingdom of heaven is a present reality. And just as certain, the kingdom of heaven has a future climax and culmination. But present enrollment, if I'll use that word, present allegiance is necessary to be included in the future. And so the kingdom of heaven is simply those who choose to follow Jesus. And we have here the king mentioned, the king, God himself, making a wedding for his son, Jesus. And the wedding here and the invitations of this wedding is the invitation to the gift, to receive the gift of salvation, to receive righteousness by faith. It is somewhat, the wedding could be, and we'll look at that a little later, it seems like it maybe shifts toward the end of this parable, could be speaking of the future when the bride meets the bridegroom and we have the marriage supper of the Lamb. But this is so much more, and it's very present day what this wedding represents in this parable. It is the invitation now. And the Pharisees who heard this parable understood their customs, and it's my understanding, what I've read, is that it was customary for there to be two invitations to a wedding. And we see that here. This king sent out his servants, which the first time that is used is in verse 4. No. In verse 3, he sent forth his servants. The word there, servants, means he sent slaves. He sent his slaves, and there were those to invite to the wedding. And they went and they invited them. And they refused, and they didn't want to come. There was a second invitation, typically, because the first one didn't include an exact time. And we learned some more of those details in some other parables Jesus told. But when an invitation went out the first time, it was the responsibility of those invited to prepare, to wind down their work, to get ready for the wedding, to take lamps and oil and whatever they would need so that they were ready, so that immediately when the second call came, and we see it here, I have prepared, my dinner is ready now. And it was, so the second call was to those who were ready. It was too late to start getting ready when the second call came. But here are these ones who received this invitation in verse 3. They just kept on with their busyness and their work and their other important things, not necessarily wrong things, but they kept on. They did not prepare for the wedding. They refused the invitation. And then the servants brought back this refusal to the king, but it seems like he didn't accept their refusal. In their culture, it was different than we are familiar with. I'm fairly certain that most of us have received wedding invitations that we needed to decline. That won't work to be there. In fact, most couples, when they're sitting down and they're making a list of guests in our culture, they have this magic number that about 75% will come, so we can over-invite. You know, that's just our culture. Not so. Don't let that cloud our thinking about this culture. A wedding invitation was serious, and it was not culturally acceptable to decline, is my understanding. But they did. They did. Furthermore, when he sent out the second invitation that said, dinner is ready, it's time to come, the more noble of them just laughed and went on to work. But the others not only disrespected and disregarded the message, but they abused and killed the messengers. Absolutely deplorable and abhorrent in any culture. We don't need to explain that. Who and why would you ever kill the one who brought you an invitation to the wedding? I don't know where in here these Pharisees started figuring out who they were and exactly how this fit in their life story. But let's move on to verse 9. This king said, go out and just invite everybody. Whoever you see, go to the highways. That meant my understanding is, go outside of the city and to wherever the common folks and wherever there was crowds of people, just invite them in. He said, I have a dinner, I prepared it, and we're gonna furnish the feast. And they did. And so to the Jewish audience that day, the message was clear. The king, God your father, who you claim as your God, is inviting you to the banquet, is inviting you to the royal gift of salvation. You've received the advance notice through the prophets and all through the Old Testament. You've received this notice, this first invitation through the Psalms. David wrote often of the coming salvation of the one who's coming. And even the law pointed forward to the opportunity they would have to participate in this great event. And the whole sacrifice system of the Old Testament that God set up was intricately loaded with types of Jesus, of this wedding, of this salvation that was going to be offered to them. And yes, the audience here today was these privileged ones, the ones who received the invitation but were guilty of disrespecting and disregarding it. They were guilty of abusing and killing the messengers. And Jesus is telling them, the king will furnish his feast. He will send his messengers outside, and he'll invite everyone in outside of the privileged circle. And we can understand this message to the Pharisees, to the Jews. They did. And if we back up to chapter 21, Jesus had told them just in the same discourse another parable that was very similar, that one of the man who planted a vineyard, and when he went to inquire fruit, they didn't acknowledge his ownership, and they killed even the son. And I'd like to read, if you'll back up, Matthew chapter 21 and starting at verse 42. Jesus said unto them, this was after that parable, Jesus said unto them, did ye never read in the scriptures? The stone which the builders rejected, the same has become the head of the corner. This is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. Therefore say I unto you, the kingdom of God shall be taken from you and given to a nation bringing forth the fruits thereof. And whosoever shall fall on this stone shall be broken, but on whomsoever it shall fall, it will grind him to powder. And when the chief priests and Pharisees had heard his parables, they perceived that he spake of them. But when they sought to lay hands on him, they feared the multitude, because they took him for a prophet. Here's the lesson to the Pharisees, right here in verse 43. Jesus was telling them that you are rejecting. And God's going to take the kingdom, which up until this time, the nation Israel was God's people. And Jesus is explaining to them that because of your rejection, God is going to give this to a nation, in fact, to all nations. He's going to go out and he's going to invite all in. And these were the ultra-religious and the upper social class of people, and they would never have rejected a wedding invitation like Jesus was telling them they're doing, not in physical life. But they were doing it in their, exactly right now in the temple, working against Jesus. They were rejecting. And this king, Jesus told them, was wroth, and he sent forth his armies, and he destroyed the murderers and burned up their city. I don't know, but that's what happened to Jerusalem 35, 40 years right after Jesus said this. This very thing came to pass. And so we can understand the lesson to the Jews, but there's more. Most of Jesus' parables, if you read them, they basically had one simple theme, one lesson. But this one, I believe, has a couple more, and they're for us. If we understand this setting of the parable to the Pharisees, the second part I'd like to look at, the parable to us. Who are we in this parable? And I think we know. We are the fill-in guests. We're the ones that have been called from the highways and the crossroads outside the city. We're invited because the Jews who received the first invitation rejected it. We are that nation who are called to come and to bring forth fruit that Jesus said. We are, if you look at verse 10, 22 verse 10, we are those good and bad that were brought into the wedding. Those who looked like candidates for salvation and those who didn't were all brought and invited. We're invited because the Jews rejected. Jesus changed who God's people are. We talked about that. We are not Abraham's biological descendants, but we are recipients of that promise God gave to Abraham thousands of years ago when he said, through your descendants, every nation of the world will be blessed. And so we are. This started with Peter. A number of years after Jesus said this, we find Peter on that housetop, on Simon's housetop there in Joppa. And God gave him that vision. And God started to make plain to the Jews and to the early church leaders that I have a plan to include the Gentiles. And what I'm calling clean, don't you call unclean. It's open to all. And this multiplied when, of all people, one of these very elite, upper class, religious, ultra religious Jews was arrested by God in the middle of trying to kill those who accepted the invitation, and we find God bringing Paul and commissioning him to go to the Gentiles, to our ancestors, to give the invitation to come to the feast, to come to the feast of the gospel, to salvation. And so as we think of our place in this parable, we are the ones that are invited, not by merit, not by class, not by royal association, not by any kind of logical connection to the king. We are just those crowds, but we're invited because we're just one of the crowd. And the king said, go invite everybody. And here we are. Here we are, invited to experience the royal feast. And so what is our lesson in this parable? What is the lesson to us? I'd like to read Paul's writing in Romans chapter 11. He tells us the lesson in very clear words. The Romans were a group just like us. They weren't Jews. They weren't of those people of Israel, but they were ones that Paul and God had designed now that they would be invited, and they were believers. And Paul uses another illustration. Let's read Romans chapter 11, starting at verse 17. These verses tell us lesson number 2 from Jesus' parable. Romans 11, 17, and if some of the branches be broken off, and thou, being a wild olive tree, were grafted in among them, and with them partakest of the root and fatness of the olive tree. So Paul's using the illustration of a tree, and some of those branches, because of unbelief, were broken off, he said, and now there's room for you. You're a wild olive tree. You're one of those that was out in the hedgerow that just as likely could have been pushed over in the burn pile, but no, you've been taken. And you're offered this privilege to be grafted in. And I'm not familiar with that. You can watch some videos on it where they peel the bark back and they connect the wild branch that came from the hedgerow into the root. And this branch, by being implanted there, grafted there, has access to the fatness, to the richness of the tree. And so here's verse 18. Boast not against those other branches that were broken off. Boast not against the Jews, you Gentiles. But if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee. Thou wilt say then, the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in. Well, yes, because of unbelief they were broken off, and thou standest by faith. Be not high-minded, but fear. For if God spared not the natural branches, the Jews, take heed, lest he also spare not thee, you wild branch, you of extra privilege. Behold, therefore, the goodness and severity of God on them which fell, severity, but toward thee goodness, if thou continue in his goodness, otherwise thou also shalt be cut off. And so here's the lesson for you, for us Gentiles. We have a privileged position with Jesus. We received the invitation to the wedding, to be part of the kingdom of heaven. But beware. The same unbelief that caused those Jews to reject it is native to each of us here. And if God spared not the Jews because of unbelief, unbelieving Gentiles will also be cut off. That's the lesson. It's not our we're not in a position to boast and feel high-minded, but to stand in awe and to in reverence of our privilege, not in a presumptuous way. We're only here because of faith. It's the only access to God. Beware. Let's go back to Matthew 22. And it seems like Jesus added a second chapter to his story. He made the lesson very clear to the Pharisees. They understood it. There's a clear lesson for us, who we are and how we should relate to that. And then we have the king in verse 11, the king came in and he saw there a guest without a wedding garment. He had not on a wedding garment. And we read of his extreme displeasure and pronounced judgment, eternal judgment on this guest without a wedding garment. And what is the lesson? Did Jesus just add this for extra interest, or we know better? What is the lesson? What was the practice of the wedding garment? What did these Pharisees understand him to be talking about, and what does it represent to us? And some of these answers are maybe less clear than the lessons in the beginning of the parable. But I'm told that it was a custom, it was normal, in a wedding setting like this, a royal wedding, that the host of the wedding provided garments for the guests to wear. And they were only allowed in as they put on a garment that had been provided by the host. And it was clearly a serious breach of conduct to be found at the feast and not having on a wedding garment. It received such a harsh judgment from this king. I don't know what the possible reasons could have been. Why didn't this man have on a garment? Did he have it on to get in and took it off? Did he have something on that looked close enough that most people missed it? Did he have on a compromise? Was he an imposter? Did he have a cover-up? I don't know. I tried to imagine. But let's think a bit, what could be the spiritual lesson? What does this garment, the wedding garment, represent to us? And I found that Bible scholars don't agree. Some say this is clearly showing the righteousness that is imputed to us by Jesus. And others say, no, can't be. But one thing they seem to all agree on is that in the Bible, the thought of putting on a garment like this is to put on righteousness, to put on right living is the definition of righteousness. Matthew Henry says, the wedding garment is a frame of heart. A frame of heart and a course of life agreeable to the gospel and our profession of it. The wedding garment is a frame of heart of desiring to please God and then a course of life that shows that's our desire. And so this man's entrance into the kingdom of heaven, this man and all of us, to enter the kingdom of heaven, to be one of Jesus' followers, must meet the requirement of righteousness, not self-righteousness, not some kind of compromise or counterfeit, but putting on the righteousness of Jesus by faith, by experiencing regeneration, by being renewed in our minds. And what we're talking about here is a righteousness that is from the inside out. It's a garment that is a result of what has happened in our hearts. And here's where it seems to switch to the eternal scene. This king's judgment of sending him away into outer darkness, and Jesus clearly used these very descriptions to describe the eternal state of the unrighteousness and unbelievers in other parables. And so it's also fair to think about a bit of the marriage supper of the Lamb and how all those, we're given that picture of how all those who accept the invitation, who come to the wedding, to salvation, can look forward to the time of when our bridegroom calls us and will be with him at the marriage supper of the Lamb. And so, I don't know, like I said, what this all could be. Given the audience that Jesus was talking to and their extreme fixation of outward appearances and actions, I wonder if this wedding garment was This man had something on that was a close match to where many didn't even catch it. But the king, knowing all things like he does, picked it right out. That this garment was a cover-up. That this garment was something just fakely put on and not a change from the inside out. It would fit very well with the harsh judgment that was pronounced on the man. And it's clearly another lesson for those of us who claim to be of the kingdom of heaven. And so, fellow Gentiles, fellow outsiders, wild branches who are grafted in, let's understand our delicate, undeserving, but yet such a rich and royal and full place of belonging with Jesus in the kingdom of heaven. I haven't stopped to think about that as much as I should. How undeserving I am, and what a miracle it is that we are invited to the kingdom of heaven. And so Paul's advice to the Romans is very fitting to the Americans. Be not high-minded, but fear. Take heed, lest he also spare not thee. Be prepared. The king is coming, and the king is inspecting garments. And the king will recognize fakes. The king will recognize those who put it on and took it back off, who are not faithful. That's the call to us. Jesus said, "For many are called, but few are choosing," which is, I think, the way that verse we would put it in our English. Many are called, but few are choosing. All of us have heard the call many times, and all of us are expecting another call. A man we know answered that call this week. And there's so few Jews and so few Gentiles. And the answer, the question to all of us is, what are we doing with the call? And I'll close with the title. Come to the wedding. Let's kneel to pray.